You may have noticed from the bulletins, or lack thereof, if you had a bulletin, you're one of the lucky ones. I think the only got 20 done because the copy machine went down. So hopefully you'll be aware of all the things that are going on anyways. But my sermon title this morning is Korah's Rebellion, Lessons That We Can Learn from Korah's Rebellion. Now, the word rebellion, it makes us think of things that we're very familiar with. We can think of mutiny, and we can think of a pirate, and there's a rebellion going on, or you can think of a country and how it rebels against its oppressors. We're going to talk about one of the great Bible rebellions. One of the great stories in the Bible is of a group rising up against its leader, a mutiny. It's very well known. It's kind of an ugly scene at times. But I want to go ahead, and I want to begin in verse 1. This is a very powerful lesson. I want to try to get through as much of it as we can this morning, and hopefully we have enough time to get through all of it. In Numbers chapter 14, verse 1. Now Korah, the son of Izhar, son of Kohath, son of Levi, and Dathan and Abiram, sons of Eliab, and On, the sons of Peleth, sons of Reuben, took men. And they rose up before Moses with a number of the people of Israel, 250 chiefs of the congregation, chosen from the assembly, well-known men. Isn't it amazing how a poor example sometimes starts making a following, getting a whole bunch of people behind them? Korah and Dathan and Abiram and On, they start this rebellion against Moses and against Aaron. And it's kind of interesting because Korah's a Levite. These other three guys are all Reubenites. What do they have in common? Is all they have in common a common hatred for Moses? A common complaint that he's not the person that he should be? If you have a relationship with the only thing you have in common is a complaint or a hatred, evaluate that relationship. Is it a relationship you truly need? Korah and Dathan and Abiram and On, that seemed to be the heart of their relationship. A hatred for somebody. Now, to On's credit, you never again see him pictured. I think On actually recognizes what's going on is wrong, and he drops out. So On disappears. I think he repents, and I think that he remains faithful in the end. Let's pick up again in verse 3. They assembled themselves together against Moses and against Aaron and said to them, "You have gone too far." Now this phrase, "you have gone too far," is going to be repeated. Here, Moses and Aaron are being accused of having gone too far. Beginning again in verse 3. "For all in the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord?" When Moses heard it, he fell on his face. And he said to Korah and all his company, "In the morning the Lord will show you who is his and who is holy, and will bring him near to him. The one whom he chooses, he will bring near to him. Do this. Take censers, Korah and all his company, put fire in them, and put incense on them before the Lord tomorrow. And the man whom the Lord chooses shall be the holy one. You have gone too far, sons of Levi." So Korah and his band, they say to Moses, "All the congregation is holy, Moses. Why then do you have the exalted position? Why then is Aaron the only priest?" See, they don't like that Aaron is the only priest. Korah seems to want this position of priesthood, although at this point, he's not coming out and saying it. And in fact, he accuses Moses and Aaron of exalting themselves. He says, "You're wrong, Moses and Aaron. All the congregation is holy, so we should all be serving in this capacity." Was it true that all the congregation was holy? Absolutely. In the same way that we as Christians are all holy. You know, Peter said that we are a holy nation. In the same way the Israelite nation was a holy nation. But did the holiness of the nation, did that mean that they shouldn't have leadership? Because we're all holy, get rid of leadership? No, it did not then. And it does not today. We in the church still need leaders. Even though we may all be holy, we still need holy leadership. We still need holy men to lead us. The fact that they were all holy did not remove the fact that they still needed leadership. And Korah here and his band assumed that because they're all holy, there should be no special offices. Listen to this quote from the pulpit commentaries. "Moses would have rejoiced to take Korah's place, or even the lowest place in the camp, if God had put him where he was. If God had not put him where he was. Thus, these leaders of the people had yet to learn, as only bitter lessons would teach them, that they were under a theocracy. There was no room for a democracy, either real or pretended, in Israel. Nor is the Church of Christ now a democracy, though it is the fashion sometimes to speak of the democratic spirit in it. It does indeed, listen to this statement, the church does indeed make light of human distinctions, traditions, fashions, and prejudices, listen to this, but only to put them in the place of the authority of Christ. But only to put them in place of the authority of Christ. He has appointed His church humbly and faithfully to execute His will. You see, in the church we have distinctions, we have differences, we have different people. And one of the things that I think in our society, you know, there's a big movement, and has been for long before I was born, women's equal rights. And the church, sometimes that complaint comes in. Well, there needs to be women preachers, women elders, women song leaders. And the truth of the matter is not that God doesn't like women as much. He doesn't love them any less. Their role is no less significant. And remember this point as we come back later in this lesson. The role of women in our worship, in our church, is no less significant than men. It's different. The church does make distinction. Listen to this quote one more time. The church does indeed make light of human distinctions, traditions, fashions, and prejudices, but only to put in place of them the authority of Christ. You see, Christ has given us a place of authority, a realm of worship, a way to worship, an organization. And some don't like that. And that's too bad, because this is not a democracy. This is a theocracy with God, with Christ as our King. And if we are in His kingdom, the church, we have to do it by His rule. And again, it's not because Christ was sexist or a bigot. It simply was the way that Christ had planned His church to be ruled. Moses and Aaron did not ask to be put in these positions, but they were put in those positions by God, and they had to serve in those positions. Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, and 250 other men didn't like it, but it wasn't a democracy. It was a theocracy. Let's pick up in verse 8. And Moses said to Korah, "Hear now, you sons of Levi, is it too small a thing for you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to Himself to do service in the tabernacle of the Lord and to stand before the congregation to minister to them, and that He has brought you near to Him and all your brothers, the sons of Levi, with you? And would you seek the priesthood also? Therefore, it is against the Lord that you and all your company have gathered together. What is Aaron that you grumble against him?" Moses challenges them to consider the allegations they're making. He says, first of all, look what God has done for you. He says again in verse 9, is it too small a thing? He says, is this thing so insignificant that God has done for you? God had already given the Levites, Korah, a place of honor. He'd already given them something special. They were Levites. Look at what he says God had already done for them. Look at what he says. Is it too small a thing that the God of Israel has separated you from the nation, from the congregation of Israel? Why? To bring you near to Himself, to do service in the tabernacle, and to stand before the congregation. Is this insignificant to you, Korah? Look at what God's given you. Look at what God has done for you, guys. But they didn't see it. They only saw what they didn't have. And that's why Moses says here, and would you seek the priesthood also? Because Moses knew what was in his heart, that they wanted the priesthood. And they were complaining against Aaron. They were grumbling against Aaron because what they had wasn't good enough. Moses challenges them to consider the accusation. Too often, important lesson for us. Too often we don't see the importance of the jobs God has given us. I mentioned a minute ago, women's role in church and worship in the congregation is no less important. The only time it seems less important is when we think it's less important. Korah's job was very important. Korah was set apart. He had a specific duty to do. Too often, we don't see the importance of jobs God has given us. God does not give you jobs that are meaningless. God does not give jobs that are insignificant. If God has given you a job, it's important. He does not... You've all heard that statement. He does not make junk. Well, this is true also. He doesn't give junk jobs. He only gives important jobs. God had already honored Korah. But why was Korah not happy? Because pride makes us dissatisfied with our present status. Pride makes us think, what I'm doing now is not good enough. I need to be something greater than this. Again, why? Because I'm full of pride. I can do something better than this. Pride makes us unaware of the blessings we already had. Korah was already blessed. But because of his pride, he didn't see it. And here's another thing that's kind of worth pondering. If Korah had a right to rebel against Moses and Aaron, Did not all the other tribes, Reuben, Simeon, Judah, have a right to rebel against the Levites? Because they didn't have that position. There's always different positions. Does one position that seems lower then have a right to rebel against another one? Because we think it seems lower, does that make it lower? God does not give unimportant jobs. He never has, He never will. And Moses said here, Moses said in this passage, verse 11, therefore it is against the Lord that you and all your company have gathered together. How does Moses say God views opposition to his leaders as opposing God to himself? He says, you are opposing not Aaron and Moses, you're opposing Jehovah God. That's how God views opposition to his leaders. They should have focused on the task they had been given rather than on the task they did not have. Let's pick up in verse 12. And Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram. Stop for a second. Dathan and Abiram are involved in this rebellion, but not in the same way Korah and the other ones are. They're involved in this rebellion in a different way. They have different complaints. And they're not together at this point. Korah and his men seem to be over here. Dathan and Abiram seem to be some other place. So Moses calls to Dathan and Abiram and says, come over here so we can talk this out. Look at Dathan and Abiram's response. Verse 12 again. And Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and they said, we will not come up. What's the mindset of these two guys? They're not willing to listen to anybody. They're not willing to hear anybody. We will not come up. Verse 13. It is a small thing that you have brought us up out of the land flowing with milk and honey. Stop for a second again. Notice as we go through these next few verses, what Dathan and Abiram say Moses has done. Look what they say Moses has done. Verse 13, one more time. It is a small thing that you have brought us up out of a land flowing with milk and honey. They call Egypt a land flowing with milk and honey. Is it true? Was it a land flowing with milk and honey? Absolutely. A lot of blessings. But were they a part of the blessings? They'd lived in bondage for over 400 years. In slavery for over 400 years. To the point that babies were being killed. That's why Moses was spared, right? The whole plan Moses' family made. This was a land flowing with milk and honey, a land of bondage, a land of killing the babies to stop the growth of these Israelites. They say, you took us out of a land flowing with milk and honey. Pick up again in that same verse. Why did they take them out of a land flowing with milk and honey? To kill us in the wilderness. That you must also make yourself a prince over us? Verse 14. Moreover, you have not brought us out into a land flowing with milk and honey, nor given us inheritance of fields and vineyards. Will you put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up. Verse 15. And Moses was very angry and said to the Lord, do not respect their offering. I have not taken one donkey from them, and I have not harmed one of them. Moses says, don't respect them. I have not even taken the least of the beasts of burden from them, a donkey. I have not taken so much as anything from them. Don't respect them, Lord. Don't offer. See, it seems to be that Dathan and Abiram may have been worshiping on their own and had the people who were worshiping on their own apart from how God had planned for worship. That seems to be what's happening here. Now, did you notice here what's going on? Well, if you think about Korah, Korah blamed Moses for making more of himself an Aaron. Now, Dathan and Abiram, they kind of do that same thing. They said, you've made a prince out of yourself, Moses. Dathan and Abiram had slightly different issues. They didn't like him as a leader. But what do they blame Moses for? Think about this for a second. What do they blame Moses for? Taking them out of a land flowing with milk and honey. Failing to take them into a new land. Making Moses as prince. Was Moses doing those things? Here's a statement that I think is important to make. Too often, leaders are blamed by those who are in the congregation, so to speak. Too often, leaders are blamed by those who don't have the facts straight or don't remember the things the way they really are. Too often, leaders are blamed by those who don't have the facts straight or don't know or don't remember the way things really are. Think for a second. Did Moses make himself a prince? If I remember back in the book of Exodus when he saw the burning bush, he didn't want to be a leader. In fact, I don't want to use the word forced, but God had to pretty much pressure Moses into being the leader. Did Moses make himself a prince? Absolutely not. God made Moses the ruler, the leader of these people. Moses didn't want anything to do with it. Think about this for a second. Was it Moses who promised them the land of Canaan? No, it was God. Was it Moses who delivered them out of the land of Egypt? In one sense, but only through God's power and because of God's command. See, they're angry with Moses, but they don't have their facts straight. And they don't remember things accurately. But they're blaming Moses, when in reality, they're unhappy with God. They're saying, Moses, you haven't delivered these promises. But the truth is they don't think God has delivered these promises. But God's never mentioned in their accusation. Were they aware that Moses was forced into this position of leadership? They seem to have been unaware of a lot of these things, but they were going to blame Moses anyways. Let's pick up in verse 16. And Moses said to Korah, be present, you and all your company, before the Lord, you and they, and Aaron tomorrow. Notice this. Moses is allowing Aaron to be challenged as well. He says, Aaron's going to compete right along with you guys for God's honor, for God's blessing. He says, Aaron's going to be there too. So you guys, you and your men, and Aaron tomorrow. That's what's happening. Verse 17, let every one of you take his censer and put incense on it. And every one of you bring before the Lord his censer, 250 censers, you also and Aaron, each his censer. Okay, so they're supposed to bring this censer. This thing that only the priests were supposed to do. Moses says, get your censers, get your fire, and come before the Lord tomorrow. We'll see who's holy. We'll see who God has chosen. Verse 18. So every man took his censer and put fire in them and laid incense on them and stood at the entrance of the tent of meeting with Moses and Aaron. Then Korah assembled all the congregation against them at the entrance of the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord appeared to all the congregation. Notice this. The Lord appeared to all the congregation. Remember that, because in a little while it's kind of amazing what happens. The Lord appeared to all the congregation. Verse 20. And the Lord spoke to Moses and to Aaron, saying, separate yourselves from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. How is God feeling about this? He said, Moses and Aaron, get away. I'm going to destroy them. You know, Moses and Aaron, you're good men. You're doing my will. They're bashing you. They're tearing you down. They're not happy with what I've done. I'm going to destroy them. Look at Moses and Aaron's response. And they fell on their faces and said, O God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin, and will you be angry with all the congregation? And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, say to the congregation, get away from the dwelling of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. So Moses and Aaron intercede on behalf of the congregation. And God hears their prayer and says, fine, I won't destroy them all, but get away from those who have started this rebellion. Get away from their tent. So Aaron is allowed to be challenged. God speaks to Moses and Aaron, tells them to get away. Notice the heart of these leaders. They fall on their faces. Had the nation of Israel been a blessing to lead at this point? It was rebellion after rebellion, grumble after grumble, complaint after complaint. I'm not liking anything you're doing, Moses and Aaron. You guys are the wrong leaders at the wrong time, all the time. They were never doing anything right by the nation of Israel. Moses and Aaron, though, when this is about to happen, what do? They fall on their faces and say, God, have mercy on them. You see, true leaders are forgiving. True leaders are compassionate. Moses and Aaron were filled with these qualities. They said, God, don't do it. They fall on their faces in prayers. And what's the difference between Moses and Aaron and Korah, Dathan, and Abiram? So obvious. Moses and Aaron truly cared about the congregation of Israel. The other ones didn't. Pick up in verse 25. Then Moses rose and went to Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. And he spoke to the congregation, saying, depart, please, from the tents of these wicked men, and touch nothing of theirs, lest you be swept away with all their sins. So they got away from the dwellings of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And Dathan and Abiram came out and stood at the door of the tents, together with their wives, their sons, and their little ones. And Moses said, hereby you shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all these works, and that it has not been of my own accord. If these men die as all men die, or if they are visited by the fate of all mankind, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord creates something new, and the ground opens its mouth and swallows them up with all that belongs to them, and they go down alive into Sheol, then you shall know that these men have despised the Lord. And as soon as he had finished speaking, all these words, the ground under them split apart. The earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up with their households and all the people who belonged to Korah. Now I want to stop for a second and make this point. Korah's children were not destroyed in this rebellion. They were not a part of the rebellion. They were not destroyed in it. In Numbers chapter 26, verse 11, his children are mentioned. So God was not punishing the children of Korah, but those who belonged to him, meaning those who were following his lead. Let's pick up in that same verse. So all the people who belonged to Korah and all their goods, verse 33. So they and all that belonged to them went down alive into Sheol, and the earth closed over them, and they perished from the midst of the assembly. And all Israel who were around them fled at their cry, for they said, lest the earth swallow us up. And fire came from the Lord and consumed the 250 men offering the incense. This is great punishment. This is tremendous punishment here. Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, those who were following their rebellion, the earth swallows them up. What a horrifying, terrifying, scary scene. But it's just as Moses said, well, we'll see who's from God. If they died of old age, fine, then I'm wrong. But if the earth swallows them up, then we're the ones who God has appointed to be leaders. And as soon as he's finished making this challenge, the earth swallows them up. Then the 250 men who had been burning incense that they shouldn't have been burning, they were not priests, they shouldn't have been burning it, the 250 men who did this are consumed with fire. Their punishment was great. This is one of the great rebellions of the Bible, and the punishment for the rebellion was tremendous. Let's pick up in verse 36. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, tell Eleazar the son of Aaron, the priest, to take up the censers out of the blaze. The phrase out of the blaze there is probably better translated out of the burnt. What does this mean? These 250 men who were just consumed with fire, still holding their censers in their hands, Eleazar is given the wonderful job of going and taking the censers out of their charred hands. That's got to be an unpleasant task. Aaron couldn't do it. He was the priest. He'd have to go through cleansing from touching a dead body. So Eleazar is sent to go and get the censers out of the charred hands of these men. Then scatter the fire far and wide, for they have become holy. And as for the censers of these men who have sinned at the cost of their lives, let them be made into hammered plates as a covering for the altar, for they offered them before the Lord, and they became holy. So these 250 men who offered the fire, the incense, even though they offered it wrong, it was offered before the Lord, so God says, it's holy. Scatter the fire, hammer out their censers. And look at what he tells them to do with their censers. He says, make a covering for the altar out of their censers. Why does he tell them to do this? Begin in verse 40. To be a reminder to the people of Israel, so that no outsider who is not the descendant of Aaron should draw near to burn incense before the Lord, lest he become like Korah and his company, as the Lord said to him through Moses. Eleazar gets the horrible job of going and collecting them. And then he tells them, hammer them out and cover the altar with these censers, these 250 censers that you've hammered out. I think too often we forget about the consequences of sins. You know, we sin so much, unfortunately, that we stop to think about where sin takes us. The truth of the matter is sin takes us into a separation from God. Sin separates us from God, Isaiah 59, 1 and 2. And if we're separated from God, the logical conclusion is on the judgment day, you're not going to be with God. But we sometimes we brush sin under the rug. It's no big deal. It's just a small sin, you know, it's just a white lie, it's just a cheating on my taxes, it's just whatever. We brush sin aside like it's no big deal. But God says, don't forget about this sin. Hammer out the censers. Make a covering for the altar so that nobody ever again does this sin. God doesn't want them to forget about the consequences of sin. God doesn't want to destroy people. God doesn't want to punish people. So he says, remember this. He puts a memorial for them to remind themselves, to be reminded on a regular basis. This is only for the tribe, for the priesthood, only for the descendants of Aaron. Let's pick up in verse 41. But on the next day, remember Korah and his men have died, the 250 men have died, earth swallows them up, fire comes down from the Lord. That just happened yesterday. Now today, on the next day, all the congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and against Aaron. Remember I said earlier that all the people, I made a point of saying, the Lord appeared to all the people. I made that point. I said, the Lord appeared to all the people. Remember that, how important that is. Here, the next day, this just blows me away. The next day, they're grumbling against Moses and Aaron. What are they grumbling about? You have killed the people of the Lord. They thought Korah, Dathan, and Abiram were all good men. Had they not seen God's revealing just the day before? In appearing above the tabernacle? In His powerful displays? They seemed to think that Moses and Aaron somehow, I guess, tricked them. I guess they, Moses and Aaron, they believed they had some great powers to do this. They said, "You've killed God's men." Isn't that kind of crazy? It blows me away. That verse blows me away. The next day, they grumbled. You think they wait at least a week or something, right? The next day, verse 42, "And when the congregation had assembled against Moses and against Aaron, they turned toward the tent of meeting, and behold, the cloud covered it." Look at this. "And the glory of the Lord appeared." Here He is again, appearing. I wonder if they're going to see Him this time. Verse 43, "And Moses and Aaron came to the front of the tent of meeting, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Get away from the midst of this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment.'" God says again to Moses, "Get away from them, I'm going to destroy them." Look at Moses again, and Aaron, "And they fell on their faces." Moses and Aaron, boy, these guys have such patience, such love, such compassion. It's astounding, isn't it? They fall on their faces to defend them yet again. Korah's sins are still affecting people. They're still affecting the congregation. He had so much influence that they were blind to his sin. And Moses and Aaron, again, are tirelessly making appeals from intercession and intercession on behalf of them. Verse 46, "And Moses said to Aaron, 'Take your censer and put fire on it from the altar and lay incense on it and carry it quickly to the congregation and make atonement for them. For wrath has gone out from the Lord. The plague has begun.' So Aaron took it as Moses had said and ran into the midst of the assembly. And behold, the plague had already begun among the people. And he put on the incense and made atonement for the people. And he stood between the dead and the living. And the plague was stopped. Now those who died in the plague were 14,700 beside those who died in the affair of Korah. And Aaron returned to Moses at the entrance of the tent of meeting, and the plague was stopped." That's an amazing story. That's an amazing story. Good leaders are forgiving and self-sacrificing. God says, "I'm going to destroy them." Moses and Aaron fall on their faces. Moses says, "Aaron, go make atonement for their sins. Go quickly, because God's wrath has gone out." And Aaron gets his robe hiked up in his sandals, gets his censer, gets the incense. He goes and he makes atonement, and he runs to make atonement. He runs to make atonement for people who would have just as soon killed him and Moses. He runs to make atonement for these ungrateful, grumbling, complaining people. Good leaders are forgiving and self-sacrificing. And then he stands between the dead and the living. He literally, in my mind, when I read this, he stands in between the plague and those who are unaffected, as if he's saying, "I'll go too." As if he's willing to give himself if that's what it takes. He runs, he stands in between them. This was the leader, one of the leaders of Israel, and they did nothing but complain and grumble against him. I want to make some concluding points to this lesson. First concluding point, be content where God has placed you to work. I made this point earlier and I tried to drive home the point. God has not given you a job that is meaningless. If He has given you a task in His kingdom, I don't care how small our society says it is, if God has given you a task in this kingdom, it is not small. If you're washing the windows of the church, it's not a small task. If you once a month take communion to somebody who's a shut-in, that's not a small task. You know, people sometimes desire the office of an eldership to the point that they shouldn't, you know, that it becomes a possession, an obsession for them. The office of an elder is a great thing. It's a tremendous thing. We need those leaders. But the role that God has put you in, if He has given you a task to do, is no less significant. God has given you a job to do in His kingdom. If you don't know what it is, find out what your job is. But I promise you, He has a job for each person in the kingdom. And it's not a small one. Be content with the job that God has given you. Point number two, make God your strength. How could Moses and Aaron have gotten through this if God hadn't been their strength? How could they have gotten through this if God hadn't been their focus? They remained faithful. Making God their strength made them good leaders. There was a man named Warren Bennis, and he made this comment. I'm going to read it twice. Listen to this comment, please. Leaders are people who do the right thing. Managers are people who do things right. One more time. Leaders are people who do the right thing. Managers are people who do things right. Moses and Aaron, if they wanted to have a good group of people to manage, you know, a very manageable group, they could have said, destroy them, make up some people who are a little easier to manage, God. And that could have been a good way of managing things. But they weren't concerned about managing. They wanted to be leaders. See, a manager reasons this way. The ends justify the means. A manager reasons, you know what, in the end, if I make good financial gain, in the end, if I'm more secure financially, if I'm higher in power, whatever I do to get there, that's okay. That's how a manager reasons. But a leader says every step along the path is just as important as the end. The ends justify the means. That doesn't belong in a leader's vocabulary. A leader is never going to compromise morality because of the ends. A manager will. A leader never will. Leaders care about doing the right thing. Leaders evaluate the moral sides of issues. And this is what made Moses and Aaron good leaders. They cared about doing the right thing. They cared about doing the thing that was morally right. Point number three, make prayer your focus. Make prayer a very much important part of your life. When Moses and Aaron were first confronted in verse 4, Moses falls down in prayer. Then again, in verse 22, when God says, get away from them, I'm going to destroy them, Moses again prays. Then again in verse 45, where he says, get away from them, I'm going to destroy them, Moses again prays. Moses' intercession demonstrates that he wasn't concerned about being a good manager. He wanted to be a good leader. And he made prayer his focus. He prayed on behalf of those who would have destroyed him. Just as Christ prayed, Father, forgive them, just as we as Christians are supposed to pray for those who would persecute us, we need to make intercessions on behalf of our enemies. We need to make prayers on behalf of those who would destroy us, just as Moses and Aaron did, just as Christ did. My final point, my concluding point is this. This is supposed to be an argument that goes from the lesser to the greater. If something of lesser value does something this good, how much more can something of greater value? So here's the argument. If Aaron, our high priest, was able to make atonement for the sins of Israel, and Aaron had himself sinned, Aaron had himself rebelled against Moses, but if Aaron could make atonement for the sins of Israel, how much more can Jesus Christ, our high priest, make atonement for our sins? We have a high priest that is so much greater than Aaron that we can't even fathom it. If Aaron can stop the plague because he can make atonement for sins, how much more can Jesus Christ, our high priest, make atonement for our sins? The Hebrew writer made this comment in Hebrews chapter 4, beginning in verse 14. Since then we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Let us hold fast our confession. We do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace, we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Aaron made intercession on behalf of the people. He made atonement for them sins, for their sins. Christ, the Son of God Himself, makes atonement for us to God. Christ, the Son of God, our High Priest Himself, makes intercession on behalf of us to God Himself. Moses ran with that and he stood in between the plague. Christ did the same thing. He came to earth. He died on the cross. He stood in between us and the plague. And all He's asked in return is for us to be His children, for us to be His followers, for us to be His disciples. No matter what sin you have, no matter how great your sins are in your life, Christ is waiting to make atonement for them. In Acts 2:38, we know the passage well. Peter told them, be baptized and wash away your sins. in the name of Jesus Christ. Christ is waiting to make atonement for your sins. If you have not yet been baptized, we would love to help. We would love to baptize you today. If you've been baptized, but you've fallen away and you have sins in your life, Christ is waiting to make atonement for those sins as well. If you have anything we can help with at all, please come as we sing a song that's been selected.